Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me, it's Derek Specht.
Hello.
What's happening, Derek?
Not much, man. Not much. It's getting close. It is spring. We're summer now.
Well, we're getting there eventually.
It's getting warmer, but then it gets colder.
It's right on the cusp.
Yeah.
Cusp.
Were you paddling on the weekend? I saw your canoe rack on your truck.
No, I was just too lazy to take it off when I was paddling.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
You don't know if you paddled on the weekend or not? Hey, wait a second.
What day is it here? No, it was me.
It's the 9th.
Yeah, I know. No, I just... it's going on summer, so it just stays on now.
Yeah.
Unless I need a car wash. I am going through post-solar eclipse withdrawal.
Withdrawal? Don't you have to see it in the first place to have withdrawal?
I saw the
eclipse. I had FOMO. It was FOMO, and then it actually did miss out, and now it's like
What was FOMO?
Fear of missing out.
Oh, no, I did not have fear of missing out. I saw the eclipse.
How did you see it?
Those dark clouds, they eclipsed the moon and the sun. they just blocked it all out.
The cloudy sky got darker.
Right? Oh, it got really, it got dark like as if there was a big thunderstorm coming.
Yeah.
Right?
And it came in quick and left.
Yeah.
And what was wild is, we just stayed in our yard and so we knew it was coming. We knew we were only in the 99.9% area. And so it did get dark for about 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds. And then it passed, but we were in the very top edge of the black dot, whatever the eclipse,
the totality.
So what was neat is that when we looked north, it was very bright sky. But when we looked south down over the lake, it was dark. Very dark sky. So you could see that they were in shade. I saw pictures of that NASA sent out a video.
Oh, the Hubble.
Of the ISS. They took video from the ISS.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
The ISS passed right through. So the ISS went through the dark spot himself. And you could see this moving mass. So you ever see, what is it, Star Trek, where Vulcan is... the red matter goes into the Vulcan planet
and it sucks
it up.
Yeah.
So in the picture from NASA, it's like, oh, is there a black hole sucking up the Earth?
Maybe.
So it was kind of neat that way. But yeah, we sat out in the yard and watched it go, and it got dark and then got light and it was over, but it was cloud cover. Oh, there was a slight hole in the clouds. And so for just a few seconds, we saw the sliver of the eclipse. It was just, we couldn't even use the glasses. It was so dim. So we just looked at it. It's like, oh, my eyes are okay. But it was so dim. I don't think it really hurt us.
Yeah,
I did set up my work cell phone and my home cell phone, one in the front yard, one in the backyard, and I just pointed them at the sky and thinking, yeah, my home phone is old, my work phone is my work's phone, so it's like if anything gets burned out, I don't care. But I look at the video, and the cell phone totally compensated for the darkness, so. If you look at, do you know how you can pull up the video and see all frames?
Yeah.
So you can see it darken in the middle and they get bright again. But when you watch it,
you can't tell.
There's no, it's like,
you got to put it on time adjust.
Yeah. Or like, what do you lock the white balance or lock something?
Yeah.
So anyway, so I wasted my time setting up my cameras in the yard.
I knew when it was happening. I knew I was not going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it got dark, I was busy walking to Shoppers Drug Mart to go buy shampoo.
What do you need shampoo for?
My beard. The dog.
Oh, dog shampoo.
And as they got the post office and the Shoppers Drug Mart.
Oh, okay.
Got to go mail some stuff. Yeah. But yeah, no, once I saw those clouds, I'm like, that's typical for us. Any astronomical event, clouds. Guarantee. 100%.
Yeah.
If it was a sporting event, that I could bet on, I would bet on clouds every time. Are you going to see the comet, the meteorite?
Oh, yeah.
The aurora borealis? Are you going to see it? No, clouds.
It's funny, eh? Like, I have this sort of the same experience. There's so many things that, it's like, hey, it's a really big aurora this night. We're going to see it in southern Ontario. It's like, I see clouds.
Yep.
So it happens to me all the time, too.
It's a cloud eclipse again.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. East, west, and south of Toronto were able to see it, apparently.
Yeah.
I just saw the clouds. So Tracy and Ariana went to the Royal Botanical Gardens in Burlington.
Cool.
And it cleared up just enough that they could actually see it.
Oh, nice.
Right? And the other thing is they were there to see all the flowers in the botanical garden, so mm-hmm. even if they couldn't see it, it wasn't a loss of a day.
Yeah.
Where you're seeing people, I spent, you know, $1,000 on a hotel room for a night to see the eclipse, and I couldn't
yeah.
see it.
Yeah.
Well, you pays your monies, you takes your chances, right?
I saw an interview on, like, CBC, because there are people going, what about my pets? What about my animals? What about the birds? And so they were interviewing some guy at a zoo or something. It's like, what are you guys doing to take care of your animals? It's like, the animals aren't stupid like people. So
it's not like my dog was sitting there pointing at the sky going, hey, check this out.
Yeah.
Actually, there were a couple of zoos, and I think Toronto Zoo may have been one of them. They were actually getting people to watch the animals at the zoo
mm-hmm.
to see if they noticed anything weird or different behaviors happening.
Well, the animals would think nighttime's coming. Oh, I got to find a place to settle down for the night or do whatever or yada, yada, yada. So
they just lay down for a night, and then it's time to get up again. Yeah. Wait a minute. I didn't feel like I slept at all. I don't feel rested.
I do not feel rested. That was such a short night.
For those that got to see it, that have never seen one before. Like, my daughter's never seen one before,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, it's nice for them to be able to see it at least once. There's so many photos from so many different places of the eclipse. I personally am very disappointed in the lack of zombies and alien abductions that were linked to the event.
I don't know why none people are talking about that.
None of it happened. For those that were expecting the rapture,
oh yes,
better luck next time. It either didn't happen
or you got rejected.
One of the two.
I better didn't luck make next the rapture time. Cut.
Yeah. I don't know, and that's somebody posted something about eclipses happen around the world everywhere,
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Yeah,
but how come only in North America are they prophetic?
I know,
right?
Yeah.
We're special.
I've heard a lot of people that it was like it's a sign from God to repent, and it's like, no, it's an astronomical phenomenon. It happens all the time.
Zombies, alien abductions. That's all I'm saying. Disappointed. Nary a one to be seen.
I did hear from...
As far as I know. I haven't heard from some of my friends today.
That's true. Is anybody missing?
Yeah. I think maybe once we're done recording, I may have to make a couple of phone calls.
Yeah.
Hey, is Jim there? I haven't seen him since yesterday, you say. Yeah. Flash of lightning wasn't there, you say.
Yeah, I saw some of the pictures that people posted, and some of them are fantastic.
You can see
the sort of the whatever the solar flares.
There's
or whatever,
some solar flares and stuff,
popping out around, and it was very cool pictures, very neat to see, and so it's a neat phenomenon. I've seen what is it called, a lunar eclipse?
Yep,
I've seen lunar eclipses. I've seen a few of those, but this is the first solar eclipse that I'm aware of that I saw. And you saw one. You saw the 79 one, didn't you?
Yep. Yep.
And you told me
I got a souvenir from it. I got eye burn from a solar burn from it. Yeah, yeah. I got a little bit of a souvenir from that one, but oh well.
So you're a living example of what not to do.
Right? Don't look at the sun when it's in the middle of an eclipse. Why? Never mind, do it.
Never mind.
Everybody should experience it at least once. Why?
Do you know how you do the shadow boxes? Yeah, I remember as a kid.
You mean the one I did in 79 and didn't use?
Yeah. Yes. So with the shadow boxes, you have that reflection on the back wall of the box mm-hmm. through the pinhole. And so you see the reverse image on the back wall. It's almost like it's going through a glass ball, it reverses, yada, yada, yada. Anyways, so I saw a few things pop up, and I never even thought to even be aware or look for it, but the same thing with trees and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So when the eclipse is going and it's not quite dark yet, I saw a video and pictures of all the leaves there, all the little tiny holes as the sun comes through the leaves. It shows all these superimposed images on the ground of the eclipse. All these, and some of the pictures are amazing, like hundreds of little eclipses on the ground as it peeks through the leaves.
There's a flashlight and you are never seen again.
No, you mean like the rapture? No, that you float into the sky, don't you? Is that what's supposed to happen?
No, that's the alien abduction part, isn't it?
Okay. I'm confusing them.
I don't know what's going on. I'm either being raptured or abducted. I'm not sure which.
I'm not an expert on these things.
Alien zombies are rapturing me. I don't know what's going on anymore. I hope they got grilled cheese sandwiches. Anyway.
I'm curious how many people are going to be offended by that conversation.
Oh, well.
Hey.
Science.
I know,
right? Science. Call Bill Nye. He'll set him straight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Bill Nye, science guy. I received an email. Oh, sorry. Do you got anything else to talk about before we actually get into the show this week?
No.
Okay.
Well, no, there's a few things, but I can mention at the end.
Okay. Well, I am going to mention something else. We're drinking Leinenkugel's Canoe Paddle Kolsch beer from our buddy John Carlson.
Senior,
who actually gave us that Hershey's one we were couldn't remember last week.
You have to write names on the bottles next time people give you beer.
You know what? It was easier when both of us are there getting...
Somebody's paying attention.
Because somebody's paying attention to who's giving us what and can remember. Oh, no, that was by.
Yeah.
But because I was doing it myself this year, somebody drops something off, thank you, and then I'm off to do something else and it doesn't register. Yeah, we got to bring sticky notes and just stick them on everything next year, so... Don't feel like such a putz.
So thanks, John.
Thanks, John. this one's actually quite good.
Yeah, so the Hershey beer from last week, I remember it was very good.
Yep.
This one here is
Leinenkugel's Canoe Paddle Kolsch.
It's very good.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic
Apparently,
beer.
John knows what he's talking about when it comes to
I
beer.
Know, right?
Wow.
He could be a beer sommelier.
Ooh. Our personal, we'll just send him some money. He can buy his beer and just buy you what you like.
Yeah.
And then
we'll send you money, John, and just supply us.
Mm-hmm. I received an email from a gentleman named Henri de la Vega, which is an awesome name.
I know. Henri de la Vega.
Sounds like something out of a movie.
I know, right?
Great name. He's talking about Guardian Revival. And I'm thinking, okie dokie. Guardian Revival is a New York State not-for-profit organization chartered to revive and preserve the mental health and well-being of veterans, first responders, our guardians, at no cost to them.
That's awesome.
Guardian is a defender, protector, or keeper. Our guardians are veterans and first responders, a far broader group than most people assume or imagine, who are exposed to mental and physical trauma and stress.
As they are.
Being
in that line of work,
right? Military, fire and rescue, law enforcement, emergency medical services, emergency dispatchers, corrections officers, and federal agents. And people don't think about the 911 operators.
Oh yeah, can you imagine being on the line of somebody in a traumatic event? And
yeah, one of the hockey dads, one of the goalie hockey dads when my son played hockey was a 911 dispatcher. And he never talked about the calls, because you can only imagine, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The stuff I hear from Tracy from coming home from the hospital, that, you know. But yeah, you don't really think about the 911 operators, of what they've got to go through.
You see and experience people at their worst moments.
Mm-hmm. And you're the first call.
Yeah.
Right? Stigmas related to mental health treatment among guardians make it even more difficult to address this problem, largely stemming from a culture that values self-reliance and toughing it out and marginalizes those experiences, experiencing distress or asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
You think of the military, you think of somebody dispatched, you're in a, you know, your unit's out on an exercise or something. And, and you think about the Middle East, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're coming up in a firefight or something and, you know, you got to just work through it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, right? And that's what you're trained to do. Yeah. Guardian Revival approaches the topic of mental health with non-clinical language and programs positioned to avoid these stigmas and barriers. Our programs offer a complementary approach to healthcare so that our guardians can improve their lives through empowered integrative methods. And they list their goals here. And I went on their website and checked it out. And it's a pretty good website. Our goals: decrease sense of loneliness, increased sense of purpose, growth in social network, increased sense of belonging, improved physical health. Together, these yield improved overall well-being. And all our programs are provided free of cost to guardians, so the support of donations, volunteers, and sponsorships make it all possible. So they do list on their website all these different thingies, but they got it broken programs, and they got it broken into four different segments. Another summit, which is outdoor adventures, walking, hiking, backpacking, and paddling. Boots and Paws, providing dogs for the therapeutic benefits of animal companionship. Encore, opportunities to learn, write, play, record, and share music. Music's for me has always been a big thing. Getting outdoors has always been a big thing. Sitting with my dog has always been a good thing. Music, listening to it and stuff like that. And G-Connect, virtual and in-person experiences to connect with guardians and the community. So those are the four programs that they offer. So another summit's outdoor adventures range from beginner to advanced difficulty levels and are led by certified outdoor leaders. They welcome guardians of all ages and ability levels, including those with accessibility needs. Our adventures are located throughout New York and the Northeast. We organize transit accessible adventures throughout the Hudson Valley and New York City area. And you think, like, accessible, like, you know, but you have vets come back and they're missing a leg, limbs or something like
or
that.
Or major injuries, trauma, et cetera.
He says, in his email to me, he says, we have a 9-day Allegash River trip coming this summer. It's sort of a step-up program with a training day, wilderness first aid certification, 3-day training trip, and then 9-day Allegash trip. This is 100% free for veterans and first responders. Our applications are open till May 5th, and we're trying to get the word out. So he asked if we could just mention it. So it's mentioned. But, like I say, I went to the website, and I want to talk more about what they're offering the guardians here. Our 2024 Epic Canoe Adventure will take place on the Allegash River in northern Maine, a waterway known for its scenic beauty and ample wildlife. You and your team of fellow guardians will spend 7 days traveling 82 miles from Indian Brook to Allegash Village. On the way, you will encounter large lakes, waterfalls, Class 2 rapids, and if we're lucky, some of the moose that call the waterway home. Epic Venture Program is a collection of outings and training meant to prepare you to begin your own outdoor story. Participants of the Epic Adventure Program will receive classroom instruction, field training, wilderness first aid certification, physical training plan, and equipment. So the whole point of it is to get you trained, get you into the outdoors so that it doesn't stop there, that you continue and you realize, you know, what the outdoors can do for you.
Exactly. And what it is, in my perception of it, is so a lot of people who are in the military, they or in firefighting services, police services, there's a lot of trauma bonding. And when you leave that family, that group, it can be wrenching, because you're suddenly you are losing a family when you leave the military or the police services or firefighter services or whatever it is. And so this is like You're finding a way to find camaraderie without the trauma bonding.
Right.
So, and it's a group activity. It's what you're used to when you gained your trauma or whatever ails you. And so I can see where this would be beneficial to get people together, like-minded people in a group setting and learn new skills and see what it can do if it's something for you. Like, it may not work for everybody, but I've from my experience, it does work. It's a different way of having people build that camaraderie without the trauma bonding perspective.
Yeah. All major gear and food is provided. Participation for this outing is by application. Once you've completed the application, been approved, you will join a team of military and first responder outdoor enthusiasts and complete several team and skill building activities. So it's not like they just
throw you
into a boat and say, yeah, here, we're going to follow
it's
us.
It's like Survivor.
Yeah. Participating in this program means participating in all the events below. Saturday, May 11th, Paddling 101, Indoor-Outdoor Hybrid Classroom Day. Saturday and Sunday, May 18th and 19th, Wilderness First Aid. Monday, June 3rd, Virtual Pre-Training Check-In. June 7th to 9th, Canoe Training Weekend. Monday, June 24th, Virtual Pre-Adventure Check-In. Don't miss the epic opportunity to participate in a world-class outing led by our outdoor experts. Experience the amazing Maine woods, learn how to canoe camp, and do it all alongside a hand-picked team of fellow veterans and first responders. Guardians only. Friday, July 5th to Saturday, July 13th is the actual trip. Departs from Beacon, New York, on July 5th at 11 in the morning. You meet at the Veterans Memorial Building, Main Street, Beacon, New York. They call it, the difficulty is red. It's strenuous.
Yep.
So red adventures are more difficult and are recommended for experienced hikers or those who are physically fit. Distance, 82 miles. Duration, 9 days. Applications must be submitted before 8 p.m. on Sunday, May 5th. Our Epic 2024 Epic Canoe Adventure Team will be announced on Wednesday, May 8th. Now, they do have other summit trips happening if you want to check those ones. Go to guardianrevival.org. Click the calendar tab at the top of the page, and there you can find all these different things that they're doing. You can also go to guardianrevival.org to find out more information about Guardian Revival, or use the contact page, send them a message, and for any information you can't find. But this sounds like quite the deal.
It's a great opportunity to kind of get back into that group thing. Like, what it's common, I'm familiar with it here in Canada, and I've heard a lot about it in the States, where there's not a lot of post-service support for military members. And I imagine there's still the same lack of support for, like, if you're getting out of the fire services, EMT, or police services. Like, there's not a lot of post-work support that's available,
yeah,
too. And I know the Canadian military is horrible for it, and we're known to be horrible for it. So I think stuff like this is fantastic to create that external support system that people could reach out to and participate in. It's unfortunately, a lot of people are so traumatized by it that they don't like doing these group activities. But I think if they did try it out, it's a great opportunity to kind of experience that camaraderie again. And you can see where the schedule is set up to do different various things, like with Wilderness First Aid and all this stuff. I think it's a fantastic thing to get back into that group event and adventuring and so on.
And saying that they're hand picking, you got to think they're looking at all the applicants and they're going to get people that all sort of the same similar experiences.
Yep.
And put them in a group to go, you know what, you guys are all going through the same thing here. Help each other out. And you never know what could come from that group, right?
Yeah.
A couple of, you know, there's three of you that enjoyed the trip so much, you're going on another trip together.
Yeah, and we'll mix you with some people who knew people and, expand on the experiences for everybody.
Yeah. Again, guardianrevival.org if you want to check things out and find out more information. But if, yeah, check out this trip. If it's up your alley, get your application in and go on the Allagash River. Other thing that you came across.
Yes.
This looks kind of fun.
Doesn't it? It looks pretty amazing. So I remember, what was the event that we did on Canada 150? Remember when we did the Canada 150 up at Lake of Two Rivers on the beach? I just watched from the beach, but we saw people doing canoe tug of war and stuff like that.
And that would have been you and Mike Burns, because I was on my way across the country at that
point. Okay. So it was me and Mike Burns then. But yeah, so it was interesting to see all that kind of stuff. And so when I saw this, it's like, oh, I want to try this. This looks so fun.
Because no one thinks about sports with canoes other than racing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? Normally.
Yeah, normally. Normally. Yeah. Yeah.
So stand-up paddleboard jousting.
Yes.
Full contact.
Stand-up paddleboard is difficult. Well, okay, it was difficult for me. I'm sure there's people out there that are very experienced at stand-up paddleboard that have their balance, have their feet under them. I'm not one of them. But when I saw this jousting, it's like you gear up, put on your helmet and your life jacket, and you paddle at each other just in a medieval jousting event. And so some of the videos that I saw, they just have this big ball,
padded ball on one end
of the stand-up paddleboard paddle. And so they would paddle at each other, practically ramming, and then they just reach out and joust with their paddles.
Mm-hmm. The ones I watched didn't have helmets.
They were just
going willy-nilly at each other.
Yeah.
They had their life jackets on, and they had their paddles as weapons. I mean, you had me at weapons.
Yeah. I think this would be so fun.
They say it's not a real sport, and then in brackets, yet. full contact sport, man. It's just like watching a medieval joust between knights on horses, except you're a couple of goobers on paddleboards.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It just looks like it's a lot of fun. I think that'd be a really fun group event. You get it somewhere as camping and whatever. You have some stand-up paddleboards and you just go at each other. And
so how'd you break your nose this weekend? Well, let me tell you.
I took a paddle right to the face.
I told my buddy, hold my beer and watch this.
And from the videos that I saw, generally, the people that were going down were the people that were too aggressive and they just lost their balance.
So, yeah. So take the hit.
Yeah.
Win the game.
Exactly. Take the hit. And it just looks so fun. I want to do it. I so want to do it.
If you can brace, and that's what I saw, is if you can brace yourself enough to take that hit, like you're a stone wall, dude's bouncing right off you and whoop, over he goes.
Yeah. They put themselves off balance when they reach out with the paddle.
See? Unless you're braced so far leaning into it and dude misses, then you just fall over.
Yeah. I guess you could practice for it by doing lots of stand-up paddleboard yoga or something.
Maybe.
Right?
I'm just thinking.
Learn your balance, your core strength.
There's got to be some way to up the game of this, not just hit with the paddle. Maybe, because in a joust, if they miss or their lances break, they get off their horses and sword fight.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm thinking some sort of swords in the middle. You just paddle up next to each other and start whacking the crap out of each other with swords. Like safe swords.
Yes, of course.
For the sissies out there.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That would be a hoot. Wouldn't that
be a
hoot?
You know what? That would be a fun thing if you can. And you can't do it in canoes because that's not really as fun.
No, it's not really as fun.
I mean, we've seen that as well.
It's so much easier to hurt yourself if you're standing in a canoe, as I learned from canoe poling.
Yeah.
But instead of paddleboard, you're just falling on the board or you're falling in the water.
Into the water.
Generally, 99 times out of 100, you're falling into the water because you've lost your balance. your core goes off the center line and it just pulls you down. It's like, I'm going down.
Ah. That sounds like fun.
It does. It does.
I think you should get a couple of stand-up paddle boards and
I've
try
got one. Do I you? Just need some. We need people with more stand-up paddle boards. Let's get an event together. We'll do barbecue.
Oh, can we? If I put a team together and you put a team together,
where my we
team's,
go?
My team's going to be filled with ringers. I'm not on the team.
I'm the organizer.
Let's think about this now. Yeah. I'll get back to you on it.
Yeah, that'd be a hoot.
For any professional stand-up paddleboarders out there, drop me a line at sean@paddlingadventuresradio.com. We'll chat.
Yeah. Well, we can't do it in Lake Ontario. It's too cold.
Oh, now you're gonna start drawing lines on what's too much? Really? Well, we're about to beat the crap out of each other.
I know I'm going sticks. To be in the water. I know I'm going to be in the water, and I don't want to be in Lake Ontario water.
Well, we won't be doing it right now.
But it's Lake Ontario water is cold all summer long.
That's more of an initiative not to fall
to go in.
Right? You think you're about to jump on your paddleboard buddy's board there. Tack them full on. Yeah, we'll follow that one. See what we can do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Gibson's Paddle Club in Gibson, BC. I don't know that Gibson is the same place as Gibson's Landing.
I think it is. Do so you? There's Gibson's the township and Gibson's Landing, which is the dock area.
Because that's where Beachcombers is.
It is.
Supposed it is. To I've always reach and
I've always wanted to go there.
Nickel Bangladesh.
Yes.
Yeah. Jesse and Relic. Constable John.
Great show. I love that show.
Yeah.
I love that show.
Canadian show.
Yep.
Back in the 70s,
Nick
80s.
Adonidas.
Yeah.
What was his ship's name? It was
Persephone.
Persephone. There you go.
It is bad that I can remember all these details. I don't remember what I had for lunch last week. But let me tell you what happened in 1977 when I was 9 years old.
Yes.
Oh, man. Gibson's Paddle Club in Gibson, BC promotes the sport of outrigger canoeing, which means their members are on the water several times a week. Paddlers see all kinds of nature, but also floating debris, such as styrofoam, plastic, rope, and other assorted marine items. I gotta think they'd see a lot more ocean-y type.
Yeah.
Big boat type stuff than
like
we're
broken
seeing
up
here.
Docks and foam blocks and yeah. Fishing floats and netting and there's a lot of...
Yeah, we just get the bottles
get pop
and...
bottles and...
Fire extinguishers. Their crew decided to make it a mission to collect what they could and call themselves the Ocean Rangers. When debris is sighted, they stop the canoe and retrieve what they can... But they were unsure what to do with all the collected debris. I mean, the stuff we collect, we just throw in a local recycling
bin.
Thanks to the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada, the Ocean Legacy Foundation has established an ocean plastic depot to collect and recycle select ocean plastics and marine debris. And there's got to be an awful lot of it for them to set up a depot,
mm-hmm.
right? Depot is located in the Seychelles landfill, and new members are given orientation to the site as well as safety training by SCRD personnel before using the depot. Recently, Kate and Dave Barrett, along with Bob Field, visited the landfill for orientation and transported the first collection of styrofoam from the Paddle Club compound to the Ocean Plastic Depot. And the picture they showed on the website is like a big one of those like you see a landscape or something got one of those big trailers, trailer sort of thing filled. Like that's an awful lot.
People dump a lot of stuff in the ocean.
Periodically, the debris is collected by the Ocean Legacy Foundation, taken to another facility where it is sorted, shredded, washed, then processed into pellets to be used in remanufactured products. What they collect will now be recycled into usable products.
Nice.
Ocean Legacy Foundation is a Canadian-based nonprofit organization that was founded in 2013 with the goal to end ocean plastic waste. The Ocean Legacy Plastic Program is now able to produce recycled marine debris from processed plastic recovered from used marine gear, coastal shorelines, and our ocean for use in the manufacturing of new value-added durable products. If you want to find out more about the Ocean Plastic Depot, go to oceanplasticdepot.ca. And to find out more about Ocean Legacy Foundation, go to legacyplastic.ca.
That's good for them. It's nice that there's people organizing to get together to clean up the mess that we're making, right?
Well, and like I say, I mean, we go up in our canoe up the local rivers, and oh yeah, there's a bunch of plastic bottles just to throw them in the bottom of the canoe, and we get back to shore, we'll just dump them in the whatever park we're launching from, we'll just throw them into their recycle bin or garbage cans, whatever.
But if
you're this isn't small stuff.
No, this is something that, if you're on a trip, if you're doing something, you only have so much room to collect stuff.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to be able to pick up a dump truck load of stuff from a kayak.
No, right? Not at all. But I mean, even still, you need a lot of trips up and down our local rivers to collect.
I know
that much.
There's
garbage.
So much. There's so much stuff that gets dumped.
So the fact that mind you, you see things every so often on the internet about people finding storage containers that have washed off a ship.
Oh yeah, floating.
You know, it's filled like washing machines or something.
I saw one the other day. They had a big chop saw. And so it was like a bunch of guys on a fishing trawler. They sidled up to the bin and they cut a 6-foot hole in the side, and it was filled with cell phones.
Really?
So they started tossing them up onto the deck, and it was just box after box of iPhones or something.
They're out there making their living, so it's not like they could just hook that up
and bring it in.
Some of them are out there like quite a way. I mean, they're hours to get out there.
And what you hear about often too is people who spend their lives out at sea on sailboats and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like middle of the night, you're on a crossing and suddenly you get the bottom ripped out of your boat because you hit a submerged sea container.
Right.
Because these sea containers, they can get waterlogged, and if they're just buoyant enough to be at the waterline, you won't see it, but you'll hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's just like, you know, in a river, you're coming along and it's like you get surprised in a rapid by a big rock. It's like, where'd that rock come from?
That. Yeah. Or a log or something.
Yeah. So can you imagine doing that with a sea container?
It's like, right. In the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like you can just zip 20 feet that way and hop on shore.
And ships lose these things all the time.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine a 40-foot sea container filled with like Nike sneakers or
shoes for the rest of my life. And none of them are your size.
Yeah.
Ocean Plastic Depot and Legacy Plastic, both .ca. Check them out. But yeah, it's pretty cool that they've, like I say, it's got to be a big enough problem that they've built a depot for them to drop stuff off.
Yep.
Wow. We've heard about different states that require everybody to get a sticker or whatever for their boats and stuff like that. The Oregon Marine Board is urging compliance.
So define urging.
I guess telling people do it.
Can you get a ticket?
I never saw any information about that. The Oregon Marine Board trying to boost participation in its permit program for non-motorized watercraft like paddle boards. According to the board, compliance is especially low in a couple of counties. Stand-up paddle boards and kayaks grow in popularity every year, but the OMB doesn't know how many of these non-motorized boats are actually out on the water. Kind of sounds like the gun registry, doesn't it? Let's just throw that out there.
Yeah.
Anecdotally, we believe there are around 300,000, which is almost double what we have in motorized. And the OMB said the OMB's Ashley Massey, and she says the number of waterway access permits issued is much lower. Because the paddling is such a wonderful activity and so many people do it, and it's become so accessible to pick up at Bi-Mart or Costco, stand-up paddleboard or kayak, it's really difficult to get a sense of what those numbers look like. Permits have been required since 2020 for anyone who operates a non-motorized paddle craft, and that includes stand-up paddle boards that are 10 feet or longer. So our canoes, we would need our canoes, our kayaks, we would need to get a permit since 2020. Massey says, when our marine law enforcement are patrolling waterways and they're engaging with paddlers, a lot of them aren't aware that this permit program is even around.
Permit program? I have no idea what you're talking about for the fifth time.
Are they just trying to get numbers? Like, what's the purpose of the permitting program?
See, if they were just trying to get numbers, then it would be, you know what? Go online, register
for free,
print it off, carry it with you.
Mm-hmm.
Permits cost between $5 and $30.
Guess it depends on the length or type of boat. I don't know.
Some families have like six kayaks and say only three people want to go paddling. You need three out there, says Massey. So it's one permit per boat, and they are transferable to other watercraft.
They say it weird. They should say permit per person.
Per person, not per boat.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make sense.
And, but then again, if it's a canoe with two people in it, only one person needs a permit, or the canoe needs... I can see why they went with watercraft, because, like, kayaks generally have one person, paddle boards, one person, canoes, two people, whatever, right? So I can see where they said, you know what, let's not hammer the people who are going multiple people per paddle. Like,
let's do it per craft.
Yeah, per craft. Yeah. But you don't have to... You only have to have enough permits to cover the number of people there.
So recreators are supposed to carry the permit with them, either a paper or digital copy. Kids 14 and under are exempt. Paddlers also need to carry a properly fitting U.S. Coast Guard approved and readily accessible life jacket and whistle. Children 12 and under must wear a life jacket while on board. Money from the permit goes to develop separate access where possible, especially in areas where there's mixed-use boating, says Massey. A lot of the conflict that we are hearing about out on the waterways was coming from motorized boaters saying they can't use the launch ramp because so many people are in the way.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that's bit hooey for the most part.
If I'm in a canoe and somebody's backing a boat in, I'm moving out of the way.
Well, when we went to Tobermory, people were backing their boats in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's a lot faster for us to jump in.
Yeah.
So we just, they're backing their boat in. Okay, you guys get your, they're getting out. They're starting to get it off the trailer. Mm-hmm. We throw our canoes in. We're gone. They pull the truck out.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a bullhooey thing.
If I was going to guess what the whole purpose behind this is because there's a lot of enforcement. If there's any issues, if there's to get the enforcement officers out on the water, it costs money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a method. It's a taxation method to help pay for those services.
I would have no problems having a permit if it was free and all I had to do was go online, say, here's what my boat is. Here's my name, blah, blah, blah.
But
I got three boats.
I think it's more than registration, though. I think it's more... Well, I can see where registration would come in handy, because then during enforcement, they could say, I need your permit, and your permit would have all your details.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having a driver's license in a car. Let me see your driver's license and shirts. Whatever, right? So,
and if it's transferable between watercraft, and if I've got one, and it's got my name, it's got... My 16-foot Prospector, it's got my 15-foot Osprey, it's got my kayak on it, like,
confusing.
If they go out there and find a boat,
because
I don't know if the
do you have to keep it on the boat?
No, you got to keep it on you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say whether there's something that you put on the boat or not, like a sticker.
I know, right?
Because that way, if you got, you know, you your boat floats away or something, they know. They can contact you and go, was he out paddling? Or
are we missing a person, or is this a lost
boat?
Or
just a lost boat. Yeah. So, yeah, it's they didn't get enough information on why they want to keep track of.
It seems more expensive to run the program than it would be to...
It seems more like a... It tends to seem more like a money grab.
Yeah.
Because... I don't know, unless I'm missing something, I don't really see the reason why they need to know.
Yep.
Like, look at all those cottages. How many cottages have a cottage canoe out there.
A half dozen watercraft.
That probably hasn't been used in 50 years something, right?
Like, yeah, that's a cottage canoe. It gets used once a year when somebody comes up to visit.
Yeah. I'm still big on the having the little sticker on the inside of your canoe that says, hey, this is my name. This is my canoe. If you find this canoe, call this number, send an email to here. Because that way, if it does blow away, they've got something to go on, right? So, we'll see what happens in Oregon.
Yep, exactly.
In 2020, way, way, way back.
Oh, ancient times.
It was a quiet adventure symposium.
Oh, yes.
And this gentleman walks up and says, hello, my name is Riley McClincha. And I do something called run yakking. And he gave me his card. And I looked at him and I looked at his card and I said, what is run yakking? If you go listen to our episode number 222, which is like 203 episodes
ago. Is it 221?
Sorry, 221. Yeah, 200. Did I say 222?
You did.
I meant 221. Everybody knew that.
Except everybody knew it.
Everybody knew I was talking episode 221. We talk about his whole run yakking thing and what it is. But basically, he jumps in this kayak and he'll paddle, 20 miles. Then he'll get out of the kayak and he'll run. Not walking, not hitching a ride, run back to where he parked his car, where he started paddling from, and then drive to wherever he got out of his canoe and park his car or his kayak, jump back in the kayak, paddle another X amount of miles, get out, run back to his car, drive back to the kayak and park.
Do a loop, man. Just do a loop.
Yeah. And then repeat many times. Yeah. Right? Yep. That's run yakking. So he sent me a message saying, thought I would give an update. Because he came across this one that we did and he listened to it again. Thought I'd give an update. I made it to Chicago the summer of 2022 and now trying to get to the Gateway Arch in St. Louis because he's from New York. He's even paddled from New York. Mm-hmm. So far, I've made it to Liverpool, Illinois, the Illinois River, where I stopped last October. The hiatus ends in 2 weeks, April 22nd. I plan to continue, hope to make it to the mouth of the Illinois this fall, the confluence of the Mississippi River. Next year, in 2025, crossing my fingers, I'll make it to the Arch.
Cool.
So, he uses a 9.5-foot kayak. He's called Swifty.
Mm-hmm.
He has run yaked 3,916 miles.
6,300
kilometers.
Good God.
Right? He has about 650 miles left to go on this trip, and he hopes to finish in July.
Hmm.
Pretty cool.
It is cool. It is cool. And it just exhausts me thinking about it.
Well, I remember, I listened to part of the episode there from episode 221, and I said, and I still hold true, I have friends that would do this, and I would do this if it did not include the running aspect. Just the yakking. if you didn't have to run all the way back and get your, I'd run all the way back, get my car and just head home. Paddle 25 miles, run back 25 miles, jump in your car, call it a day. See you next summer. Where I would then paddle 2 kilometers, run back to my car, call it a day.
Is that enough?
It's going to take me about 213 years to make it. No, he seems to thoroughly enjoy this. He's having a blast doing it. Gives us something to do. So he's also the author of The Run Yakker's Journey. And along with being a retired science teacher, has accomplished an array of feats, including being an Olympic torchbearer.
Okay.
A Guinness World Record holder for memorizing pi.
Okay.
A singer, songwriter, guitarist with his own repertoire of almost 400 songs that he performs mostly from memory. And he has completed 5 marathons of 26.2 miles each while dribbling 3 basketballs, which is referred to as dribbling. I don't know where the 3 basketball parts came from.
I know.
But, and I've seen pictures of him doing it.
So this is a lot. Like, my wife is impressed when I do the dishes.
You got nothing on Riley. Nothing. So hopefully, hopefully he gets as far as he wants to this year. And hopefully he makes it all the way to St. Louis by next year. Because you got to think, 650 miles there, 650 miles running back, 650 miles driving there. I'd be stopping like Burger King or
do a loop.
White Castle or something along the way. Well, good luck, Riley. Let us know what happens with this, and hopefully it all goes your way. And we'll keep an eye out. International Rafting Federation. This is another good one. International Rafting Federation has announced that they've recently joined 54 other signatory sports organizations to support the Sport for Nature framework. Framework was developed as a collaborative effort between the following organizations: International Union for Conservation of Nature, the International Olympic Committee, the United Nations Environment Program, the Secretariat of Convention on Biological Diversity, and the Sails of Change Foundation. The foundation strives to build on and complement existing initiatives and efforts, including the UN Sports for Climate Action Framework. That's pretty big.
That's pretty, yeah, big and diverse. Mm-hmm.
It aims to bring together the sports and nature conservation communities at all levels and in all regions of the world, from local clubs to global sports organizations. Signatories pledge to adhere to 4 key framework principles to protect the environment while contributing to national and global biodiversity goals. As a signatory, our organization is committed to protecting and avoiding damage to natural habitats and species, including respecting protected areas. It takes positive action to restore and regenerate nature in and around the indoor and outdoor environments where we operate. Will reduce risks to nature and enable opportunities to conserve and restore nature in our supply chains, linking wherever possible to climate goals, and will educate and inspire greater awareness and action for nature within our sport and our wider communities and stakeholders.
Wow.
That's a lot. The IRF is well-positioned to join the effort, having already created the IRF Practical Guide to Sustainability in January 2021. And we've talked about that one before, their guide when they came out with that. Guide identifies practical actions to implement during recreational and competitive rafting events that achieve the 4 framework goals described above. Examples of practical actions can be found in Bosnia and Herzegovina, the site of the 2022 and 2024 World Championships, including limiting individual vehicle access to venues and providing shuttle bus access to competitors, support staff, and volunteers, and using water trucks to provide drinking water at race venues instead of single-use plastic bottled water.
Good.
Well, I mean, you think you got 40 people on a bus as opposed to 40 cars.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's huge. Besides helping the environment, these practices have also the added benefit of saving costs and making race venues a safer and more pleasant experience for locals and competitors. Finally, the example of the IRF members contributing to these goals is the USA securing securing team jerseys manufactured from recycled plastic bottles for their 2024-2025 competition rafting teams. increasing the pace and scale of implementing sustainability practices is influenced by numerous factors, but fortunately, many can be achieved through knowledge sharing and a collective will embraced by national racing organizations, international racing industry, and competitors.
That's interesting.
That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like you got these races that are going on down the rivers and all that, and you got all the spectators,
yeah.
And you know they're along the riverbanks watching, and things are getting trampled, and things that garbage is being thrown, and anything you can limit,
exactly
to stop that environmental impact,
stop the waste
is what they're gonna look mm-hmm. to do. I have no. If you got a big water truck where I can just put my reusable
right? exactly.
water bottle underneath and refill it. I mean, the only reason I ever go to events and end up with a plastic water bottle is because there is nowhere to refill.
There's no opportunity. Yeah.
There's nowhere. Yeah. Or I'll buy a plastic water bottle and just keep refilling it all mm-hmm. weekend.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an issue. I mean, I'm the one that drank out of it to begin with, so.
So that's interesting. It was developed by, like, organizations like the IOC, International mm-hmm. Olympic Committee and stuff. But did you pull the list of the 54 other sports organizations that are part of this network?
No, but there's a massive list of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I
54 to be precise.
I could pull it, and we could just like spend like 10 minutes reading them.
No. I'm curious if there are any other water sports that were involved. Like you pulled up specifically the International Rafting Federation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious if there's any other water sports or.
Yeah, like, no, that's just because they've just done this.
Yes, I know.
Right.
I'm curious who else is involved. I'll have to look that up afterwards.
Yeah, take a peek at that.
Mm-hmm.
Sport for Nature framework.
Yeah.
And, there's, like I said, when you got big guys like this in here, you know there's going to be some big organizations help out.
Exactly.
Support and
IOC?
Whatnot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
United Nations is involved. This is incredible.
Right?
Well, good. It's progress, right? We have to progress. We can't just continue doing what we're currently doing.
No.
Right? Throwing garbage at our butts as we go along and not caring about the planet and doing whatever. So this is a climate action framework, and it's something to create a better way to sustain sport, because who wants to have a canoe race if you're trying to fight your way through all these discarded water bottles and so on, right?
Right. So, yeah, and you can't have people just trying to pick up garbage constantly, because
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter how many waste containers you have, somebody's just going to throw it on the ground.
Yeah.
Like, how many times have you been somewhere, seen a waste container, somebody goes to throw a bottle or something, and it bounces aside, and they just, okay, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That's good enough. It's close enough to the garbage can.
I do that. I go through, if I have garbage in my truck,
mm-hmm.
I throw it out at home or at work.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Or if I'm going to Tim Hortons, I grab my Tim Hortons garbage, dump it in the disposal as I'm going to him.
Here, you can have it back.
The amount of people, if I go through the drive-through Tim Hortons by my work.
Yeah.
The amount of people that pull up to the drive-through, there's a garbage can right at the beginning of the drive-through,
and it's littered all around it.
They're Michael Jordan. They think they're
do this
like, and they're tossing garbage, and it's bouncing off, and it's all around the garbage can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's probably as much around the garbage can on the ground, and then the winds pick up and blow all that everywhere.
Exactly,
it's like. Carry it in. You're not Michael Jordan. You're not making that shot from 10 feet away from your car window with a coffee cup that's half empty. Like, come on.
I remember it brings to mind a time I was going through the drive-thru, and so the guy left the drive-thru and he held up traffic for a bit. I could see he was doing something. And so what I figured afterwards is that he was dumping his cup of coffee into his mug or whatever, his go cup or whatever. And so as I figured this out afterwards, because he paused, held up traffic, and then he went again, and out through his passenger window flew the empty coffee cup.
Yep.
And it's like, he just transferred that to a steel container or whatever, his Yeti or whatever, and he just hoofed it out the window.
Why?
And it's like, why did you do that?
That's the same with cigarette butts.
I was so shocked. I know. But I was so shocked to see him just that empty coffee cup flies out the window. He's like, okay, I'm done with this now. Somebody else will take care of it. Yeah, it's like, it's crazy.
Anyway, it's the same with this. Yep, you know,
we have to do better.
People, we definitely have to do better. Well, I don't recipes.
I'm already doing really good.
I'm doing my share, damn you all. Well, let's just end this show.
You're not going to do your list?
Oh, no. We're going to end this show on a highlight. So, I will go out on the limb right now and say some topics we talk about sound really good when we start them.
Yeah.
But halfway through, you realize, this is crap.
What have I gotten myself into? So, it seemed like a good idea at the time.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. Have you ever been on the internet and you're looking at all these positive vibe, positive signs and quotes and uplifting and all that sort of stuff to, hey, all right, this is awesome. I feel so much better now. That's great advice. So I came across this thing, 10 adventurous river rafting quotes. Oh, this ought to be good. But, you know, something like this, usually I'd copy and paste so I could read them out. Well, I wasn't able to because of the format it was in. So I started typing. And by the time I got to number 5, I'm thinking, this is, but I've gone this far now, so I'm just going to spread it with everybody.
It kind of, they're not as good, but it kind of reminds me of the Silent Live skits with Jack Handy.
Right?
Inspirational coach. And Jack
gosh
Handy.
Darn it, people like me. ten adventurous river rafting quotes. You gotta know that whoever came up with these. Well, we have two theories.
Yeah, we have
two working theories. Yeah. They're genuinely.
Yeah.
Thinking, you know what? This is really good.
This is so
empowering. This is inspirational.
Yeah.
This is so positive. This sounds really good.
Yeah.
Or.
There was a
bunch of rafting guys sitting around the fire, three sheets to the wind, and someone said, okay, who can record this? Because we're going to do this. And that's sort of what we're leaning to. I don't know. So, 10 adventurous river rafting quotes. Number one.
So hang on a sec. So we're gonna have
we're gonna draw this up for an hour.
We're gonna have a diversity of people listening, and some of them are going, "Oh, these are really good. I could live my life by these." And other people are gonna go, "Oh my god, that's so funny!"
And we're falling right in the middle of all of this because some of them are okay. Maybe if we worded it differently, but I get the gist of it. Yeah. I went to an art gallery with a buddy once. And we were looking at this. It was a local gallery. And we're looking at this thing. And one lady goes, "Well, that's art." And my buddy looked her dead in the eye and says, "I may not know art, but I know crap. And that's crap." I'm just saying, whatever your point of view is here.
In the eye of the beholder.
In the eye of the beholder. So, number one, the 10 adventurous river rafting quotes. Water has the power to cleanse, heal, and rejuvenate us, and rafting is the perfect way to tap into that power. Okay?
Yeah.
Understand?
Yeah. It's cheesy, but it's good.
Rafting, number two, rafting is not about conquering the rapids. It's about embracing the flow of life.
This person does yoga.
Yes. Number three, rafting is not just a sport. It's an opportunity to get wet, wild, and wonderfully ridiculous. I'm not even...
This person's kinky.
Somebody's got a certain kind of swing at home. Number four, life is a journey, and rafting is the perfect adventure.
This guy was reaching for the stars, and he fell short.
I'm thinking life is a journey, rafting is the perfect... mode of transportation?
This gets you on your journey way.
Number five, rafting is the ultimate test of teamwork, trust, and bravery. I can see that one.
Yep. That one works.
Number six, rafting is the perfect metaphor for life. Sometimes you have to paddle. Sometimes you have to hold on tight and ride the rapids.
Okay.
okay.
They were reaching. Okay. They were reaching. Yeah. They
I understand what they're getting at.
Needs to be worked on a bit.
Number 7, life is better on the wild side, especially when it involves whitewater rafting.
Yeah, that's just somebody saying, yeah, I only know whitewater rafting.
Yeah, that was guide number 7 who really had nothing. He had nothing. He was knee-deep in, like, a couple of tacos at this point. He wasn't thinking about it.
I don't want to play this game. Yeah. I'm just going to say
I'm only here because someone offered beer. Number 8, nothing is more thrilling than being on the edge of your seat and about to face your fears. Mm. That's like a roller coaster, too.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what to think about that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go back to the drawing board, Chuck. 9, heaven is a little closer when you're on the water.
This one reads horoscopes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking cheese, like cheese whiz on this one. And number 10, river rafting is the ultimate adventure where you confront both the power of nature and the power within yourself. That's got to be the number 2 yoga person as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And some of these you got to read, almost have to read it in a certain way to emphasize certain words.
Rafting is not just a sport. It's an opportunity to get wet, wild, and wonderfully ridiculous. Does that do it for you?
Yes, yes, that works.
Good times.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to come across more of these top 10 lists.
I know.
Now, because, you know, heaven's a little closer when you're on the water.
Yeah.
All right.
That was fun.
I can see where they're going with these ones, trying to get out there, but some of them are close to the mark. Others are see the mark and turn around, go the other way. That is all I've got, I think.
I've got I came across a list of stuff going on over the summer, and some of them are prescient to us, like they're coming up really soon. One is MacFest. It's in Marmora, Ontario. It's the Kawartha Whitewater Paddlers Club. So they kick off their spring season or their summer season with MacFest. Float your fanny down the Gannie is this weekend,
mm-hmm. And there was changes to that one.
What were the changes? I didn't see.
Well, I think they're doing some construction on some part, so it's starting at a different.
Oh, start I didn't point. Know about that. Yeah,
yeah.
Also this weekend is the Raisin River Canoe Race in Cornwall, Ontario. I've watched people do that one. I watched a guy wrap a canoe around a tree in high water when I was in college on that one.
And his name was Derek.
No. James Zombar. It was a rental canoe too.
Oops. Hey, if you're going to wrap a canoe around a tree or a rock, it's better to be a rental canoe than yours.
So those are the things that are going on this weekend. So I just thought I'd read those off as I came across this list. And it covers every month of the summer.
So MacFest is where? Is that up in Palmer Rapids?
Yes, it's in... Yeah, so it's Kawartha Whitewater Paddlers. Is it the Palmer Rapids? No, there's a Palmer Fest coming up.
The Palmer Fest is the one I'm thinking. That's coming up, I think, in May or something.
Yeah, this is... they're going to do it at, actually, it's off river Saturday, the Iron Grill at 239 Station Road. Paddlers enjoy dinner, drinks, music, raffle draws. By day, the assembled organization, they organize themselves into unofficial groups for trips down local rivers like the Salmon River, the Beaver River, the Moira River, the Scutamatta River, the Black River, plus a bunch of local play spots. Find your own local lodging, pitch a tent at the Iron Grill. Price yet to be set, but is always affordable. So this is just a whole bunch of different rivers, and it's the Kawartha Whitewater Paddler.
Oh, the courses,
They're opening. This is their season opener.
Cool.
So that's those things that I mentioned are this weekend. MacFest, float your fanny down the Gannie,
and float your fanny river. with the water being lower.
Yeah, I wonder about that.
Yeah, because that's the one people build funky.
Oh yeah, they build
anything that floats.
If you can build it,
and you go down. Yeah. And I think at least 70% of the people end up in
they
the
don't
water.
Make it. They don't make it.
Yeah, they don't make it. They go swimming.
Yeah.
It's all fun, though, for the spectators. Exactly. Yeah. It's a huge spectator thing.
Yeah.
So, all righty. Anything else?
I do not have anything.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
I need to tell you off air.
Mm.
It'll come out later about a couple of big trips I'm doing in August and
October. Right on.
My October solo trip is going to be different.
Oh, yeah?
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. I am going, I'll just say this. It's going to involve a lot of spots between August and October trips.
Yeah.
In the U.S.
Oh, wow.
I'm going on a U.S. tour.
Nice.
West and south.
Right on.
That's all I'll say. And east.
That sounds perfect.
East, west, and south. Because there is no north.
Was this here. The trip you missed out on when you're supposed to go down and
a couple years
Jerry
ago?
Vandiver?
Yeah.
Oh, right
so
on.
So I'm going to hit a few spots heading down that way. But there's another part that, don't tell Tracy. it's going west, maybe as far as Utah.
Oh. Uh-huh. Nice.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. There's the Gunnison out there. There's a few big rivers out there. The Colorado, mm-hmm. the San Juan, the San Tu, the San Tri.
There's a few trips I'm trying to put together right now, too. One is...
out to Utah.
that might be on the list now, but I have to be careful because I keep getting made fun of because I keep doing non-family trips with a bunch of people. And
so take the family. No. Just no.
I take them on trips. I do trips with them like a couple weeks each year, but I don't need to use all my vacation.
You are going to so love it when your kids are old enough and they're done college, university, and moving. Out.
Yes.
Freedom!
But I'm planning an early May spring breakup trip, fishing trip to Algonquin. And I'm potentially going to be doing a hiking trip in the fall in September.
Where?
Superior.
Oh.
We'll
like
see.
The back of the Wolf Head.
Yeah, I think so. I don't, I'm not.
Oh, Hattie's Cove?
I think that's part of it.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. a great area up there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do that hike trip.
Yeah. We're going to do it over 4 or 5 days, so yeah. It should be good.
Yeah.
Looking forward to
well,
it.
Well, in October, if you're looking to head down to the Adirondacks or something, and then want to go a bit farther,
yeah,
I can drop you guys off and pick you up on the way back.
My wife was playing with the idea of doing a long road trip. And she says, what do you think of this? And she sent me a screenshot of a route that took us all the way out west, like south of the border. And so when I asked you where John Van Berger lives,
mm-hmm.
it's because we're trying to plan out the stops along the trip because we want to stop in and visit John. And I said, well, I don't know where he is, but he's probably going to be there in the summer.
So, Wisconsin. Yeah.
So we're thinking, but her route didn't include the Black Hills. So it's like, hey, I kind of want to see Rushmore and stuff, right?
So, Mount Rushmore is for chumps.
I've been there once. It was neat. But I'd go again.
If you go around the back,
yeah.
You don't actually see their butts. They're not kneeling there. The rest of the body isn't there. Like they show in the pictures. Yeah, that's not real. Apparently. Fool me once. Fool me twice.
I
not
know,
a third
right?
time. Yeah.
But yeah, so she's planning this big 2-week
long
trip.
Go to
7,600 kilometers.
You got to go to Deadwood
exactly.
and all that.
Exactly.
We did that when we lived in Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
We went down through North and South Dakota,
mm-hmm.
saw the big Theodore Roosevelt National Park, saw all the big herds of buffalo and everything, and went down to see where Wild Bill Hickok was killed and Boot Hill and all that.
I'll see all that
you
stuff.
You got to see that if you're going out there.
Absolutely.
And then keep on going and see where... Do, 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 do.
Oh, yes, the mount.
Devil's Mountain or whatever it's called.
Devil's Mount,
yeah. From Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Yeah, it's out that way.
That'd be cool.
See, you're going out that way. And if you're out there, you might as well just go over to Yellowstone and check out the geysers and stuff. Real faithful. And you get caught out in that big super volcano underneath.
I've always wanted to drive through Donner's Pass.
See
where the
going out there.
See where the barbecue was.
Yeah, check it all out.
Donner's Pass apparently had like 30 feet of snow this year.
See,
one of the biggest snow years in a long time.
Could have been a sequel.
It could have been a sequel. Yes, absolutely.
Anyway,
we are way off track.
Oh, 5 seconds left of the third period, and the New York Islanders are beating the New York Rangers.
Are you watching hockey on your laptop over there?
No, just the scores. Islanders have four games now, and they got to win all four because they just won the fifth one. So anyway, I've been an Islander fan since I was a little kid, so that's not changing. Anyway, well, what else are you going to do when you're when it's winter, hard water season. You can't go paddling, yeah, yeah. So you might as well play hockey. Welcome to Canada, hello. Beauty. So that's all I've got this week. I presume that's all you've got? Anything
yes,
else?
Yes.
Are you sure?
We're already at 120. I think we're good.
120?
114?
114.
Once we add in the stuff.
Well, I could keep going.
No.
Or, you know what I could say? If you want to find more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. 425.
Seems like an awful big number.
Doesn't it? If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends and family and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.